Now, you're talking about the Apple, the recent Apple controversy mm-hmm. with Taylor Swift and what have you. You know, it's a whole new... It seemed pretty simple when you and I were growing up. You know, you make a record, you hope it gets on the radio, you get some airplay, you get some gigs, you sell some copies, you're making a living. Or in the cases of the people you were mentioning, you make vast fortunes yeah. from this kind of system. But it's not like that anymore.
No, that part of it is different. Yeah, that part of it is different. And basically, it's the gatekeepers are gone. That, you know, the major labels had set things up in such a way that they were the underwriter laboratories. They decided who was going to get through and not. And it was about a 4% rule. And they would put out 100 records and four of them would make the money back on the other 96 that they lost money on. And they ran that paradigm from the mid-60s until, what, you know, 1990, something like that. That was kind of the way it worked. And now, of course, there's no gatekeepers, so it's a great time for you to be able to do music and to make a living with it. But yeah, you can make a living at it, but your chances of you becoming astronomically rich, you know. But then you take somebody like Taylor Swift, who, you know, I just shudder to think how, you know, if there was a Taylor Swift back in the 60s. I mean, she was kind of like the Beatles of the 60s. I mean, just astronomically successful, and everything just seemed to go the right way. But, you know, put the money that she's making, even though it's pretty vast numbers, is pretty small compared to the way the pie was cut, you know, 30 years ago, if this makes what I'm trying to say sense.
You know, but yeah. for her time, she's selling the most records and making the most
money.
But it's not going to be, the Beatles aren't coming back. That system is gone.
Well, you know, but this kind of goes to the other conversation as to why the Beatles, why Kurt Cobain or Nirvana, why, you know, Taylor Swift. And for me, I would use those three as the example of reshaping, you know, not reshaping the industry as much as just being the huge machine part of the industry and taking it to the next situation. You know, certainly Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin did their really cool thing. They didn't change the industry as much, although Led Zeppelin certainly did in terms of live shows. They were the ones that changed all of that. Peter Grant was. But what hasn't changed about the industry is connecting with the fans. And you've heard the term branding, right? Everything's about branding. It's really important. I think that's kind of a really not a great term to use for an artist or a musician. I mean, artists don't want to be branded. I mean, that's just the thought of that.
It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts.
The hot thing right on the skin.
It can hurt, you know? So I think you could
But it's demeaning for an artist to be sold like toothpaste, is what you're saying.
Well, yes, because that's kind of what it sounds like. But I think if you've studied the concept of branding, you can use maybe some other terms that are a little softer and make more sense. Certainly the word story. You know, telling your story. That's what they mean by branding. Or another way to put it would be like having your message. You know, what are you trying to say? What is your message? And if that still doesn't work, then your narrative. What is going on in your life as you're living your life? You know, what are you thinking about? What's important to you? What are the decisions that you make? And there are other people making those decisions. And if they find you in your music based on those kinds of choices in their life, whether it's the way they eat, the way they travel, the way they dress, where they live, you know, the things that they like. And then just being completely authentic to who you are. Beautiful, you know, Taylor Swift. Authentic. I mean, she writes and sings to the 96% of the kids that weren't the unpopular ones, you know. And she had their message. She was one of them. And she just ran with it. She wasn't trying to make anything up. She just told her story, and it took off. And Kurt, I mean, that Kurt Cobain, it was just, he completely sang and lived his story as well. He was singing to the disenfranchised male youth who had parents who really didn't quite know how to prepare the boys in that small little time frame of how to, you know, plus all the economic and social things that were going on.
And the gender things.
Yeah.
You know, songs like Rape Me and coming out on stage with a dress.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now the whole gender thing is, we know it's up for grabs, but then it was rather revolutionary to come across like that.
Yeah.
And yet the melody, some of the melodies that he has.
Don't get me started on his ability
to
sing.
Heart-shaped Box, for instance.
He's crazy good. Good. He made, I mean, from the idea of songwriting, and even though I do instrumental music, I spent a lot of energy in songwriting and studying with songwriters, because it really helps me out with putting, you know, crafting instrumental music. But I think in this conversation that I'm leading to, if you include the Beatles, now things start to get, for me, pretty obvious at that point. The way that these things still operate today. You know, they say because of social network, we all get to know who Taylor Swift is. We really know who she is as a person because she answers your emails and she blogs and she's got pictures of her cats and we know her lifestyle. Well, Paul McCartney was the same thing. We were 10 years old. We would go to the supermarket with our mom, right? And we would look at the teen magazines, and there would be articles about Paul McCartney's favorite color and what he had for breakfast, and, you know, the kind of, you know, so that core idea of identifying with the artist is still, to me, the premise on how it all works, and that part of the industry has not changed.